Welcome to the first edition of Talon Talk, the Morehead State Athletics Podcast. I'm Matt Chabert, your host, and I'm so thrilled to be joined today in our episode one, our first episode, by former Morehead State men's basketball standout Quentin Pryor. And Quentin, thank you for joining us, and you get to be the first guy on the podcast. How does that feel?
That's great. Great news. First off, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's a lot going on during this time, but once you sent the invite out, it was something that I just couldn't pass up. So I'm very grateful to be the first guest.
We appreciate it as well. And let's go back and talk a little bit about your career and how you came to Morehead State. 2005-2006 and then 2006-2007 were your playing years. And so just go back and tell me a little bit about how you came to Morehead State.
I came in my first year there was in 2004.
Okay.
I was a JUCO recruit. So I was there with Coach Macy and Coach Breeden brought me in. And honestly, I didn't know much about the school or anything. And my coach called me one night and told me that they had called. And I got a phone call the next day, and it was I missed the call. So I called a number back, and it happened to be Coach Macy, but I didn't know at the time.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And so we were kind of playing around on the phone because I was like, well, I don't know anybody from Alabama. He was like, I don't know anybody at this number. So once we started talking, we started figuring out, and he put the connection out there with him playing with Jordan at the time as well, too. So that kind of got me started in the conversations with Morehead. And Coach Breeden came down and watched one of my last JUCO games. And from that moment when we talked, I took my visit. I liked everything, liked the situation. And I ended up breaking my wrist right before it was time to commit. And I had a lot of schools back off me because of that, but Morehead didn't. And they even said that they would honor my scholarship if I couldn't play again. So once they said that, it was just a no-brainer.
So you come to Morehead State, and then – so you said you had to – you ended up having to sit out that first year to kind of recoup. That must have been tough, though, to have to sit out and know that, you know, watching everybody else on the floor and – that happens to a lot of people, but until you go through it, I guess you don't realize how you missed the game and having to sit out.
Oh, yeah. It taught me a lot of patience. Probably, honestly, gave me a lot of resiliency. Just because going through that whole ordeal, I was originally told that I would only be out for a few months. And come to find out about towards the end of the first semester, my first semester at Morehead, I asked for a second opinion. And I got one after Christmas and ended up finding out that I had another broken bone in my wrist. So
Oh, wow. It
prolonged my first year. So I had to sit out that year. And I mean, it was great. It let me see the game in a different way, get myself in shape and add on a few more pounds that I needed at the time for the Division I level.
So you go through the first playing year, and obviously, and actually I came to Morehead State that same year. And obviously a pretty tough year that last year with Coach Macy. But after that year, then you had the coaching transition to Coach Donnie Tindall. Do you remember what all, you know, as you go back and remember what that was like when Coach Tindall came in and just knowing that transition and having to go through a coaching change?
Well, anytime you go through a coaching change, for most players, it's always different, especially if that guy didn't recruit you or you don't have a relationship with him previously. I just so happened to know Coach Tindall a little from my time from junior college. I was going back and forth between there in Middle Tennessee as well. So I kind of knew him a little before Morehead. But just when he came in, I just remember everything just changing as far as us the workouts and everything like that. It was I'm not going to say army, but we were getting up pretty early doing conditioning at times that we weren't accustomed to. And once that happened, I was just like, okay, like this is like a different time, a different culture, like something's changing right now. And, you know, a bunch of the guys embraced it once we learned that it was only one way for us to go, and that was up at the time, because the year before, like you said, it was a rough season. A lot of things happened that was out of our control, but I didn't want to go out my last year without at least going out at least competing in the OVC tournament.
Yeah, and, you know, you guys did accomplish that. To anybody else, maybe a 12-18 record might not look so good, but having coming off of the year before, that had to be, you know, a pretty decent, satisfying year for you guys in Coach Tindall's first year. It kind of fell off. I noticed in the end there was a little bit of a losing streak, but you guys really had it going there in the start in the middle of the season, had a winning record up until probably all the way the middle of the season.
Yeah, we did. We started out real well. Had some big games, back and forth game with Marshall that we ended up losing at home, and a couple others with Central Michigan at home before Christmas as well. But we started out tied for first in the conference. I think we were tied for first at least through the late part of January. And it just, for some reason, we went to Sanford and had a chance to take sole possession of first place, and we lost that game, and we just ended up snowballing after that, and never really recovered until the last game of the regular season when we had to play our way into the tournament at the time, which we ended up beating Austin Peay, who was number one in the conference at that time.
Do you I guess you obviously remember some of the teammates on those teams, and if you can kind of go through who was some of your closest teammates, I guess, and what do you remember about some of those guys back on those teams?
Closest, I would say, wow, I got to think about that one. I got to take it back, because at the time, I'll say this, I wasn't the person that I am now, so I was more business-like and focused on my goals as opposed to just mingling and talking to everybody. So at times, I can say I probably wasn't the best teammate, but overall, like, I can't really say that I had a favorite. Everybody that I was with, you know, I had a good relationship with. There was never any animosity or anything like that. Of course, as basketball players and competing, you know, there's going to be some words said. There's going to be some physical issues as well. But at the same time, you know, we all left it in between the lines because we knew what we were there for. And we knew what we were fighting for.
Talking with Quentin Pryor, Morehead State's former Morehead State guard forward, Quentin Pryor, from originally from Eupora, Mississippi, came to Morehead State in 2004 and played two seasons, finished up in 2006-2007, averaged double figures both years. So when you were finishing up your career, were you an education major when you were here at Morehead State?
I actually started out as an education major, and I was having to go back and forth between student teaching and different things, and playing basketball at the time. It wasn't really lining up, and it was going to conflict with my schedule. So I actually switched over to general studies, but I took all of the education courses still. So I didn't graduate with my bachelor's degree in education, but I had it in general studies with education being the primary part of it.
And now a special education teacher at Westport Middle School in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, have you been in Louisville since you've graduated, or how was your path to get to where you are now, where you are as a teacher?
It was long. I'll say after I finished at Morehead, I went over to Louisville. I went to Europe and played for about 7 years. I played in Germany for four, Austria for two, and the Netherlands for one. I ended up winning the championship my last year. And about 2012, me and my wife decided to move down this way. We first moved over into Indiana and didn't like it too much. So we looked to move over into Louisville because we felt a little bit more comfortable here because we knew people from Morehead here. And we've been in Louisville since 2015.
Okay.
And then just with me teaching, a few people that I knew here had told me that I should get involved in it. And I was really hesitant coming from playing ball and having to deal with kids on a daily basis at the time. So I was like, nah, it's not something I want to do. But I ended up substitute teaching and I fell in love with it. And everybody that saw me knew and they were pursuing me and telling me that I need to go and try and become a full-time teacher. So I ended up going back to school and getting my master's in special education through Campbellsville University.
Okay. I do want to get to your teaching career because that's very important and have you talk about that. But you did mention being able to have the opportunity to play professionally for several years. What types of lessons? And I know, obviously, getting to see the world, and you said mentioned Europe, and that had to be a fun experience. I know as a player, sometimes everybody has aspirations of obviously being in the NBA, but there's a lot, so many opportunities, I guess, for guys overseas to still play professionally and have a lot of success doing it.
Yes, it is. I'll be honest with you. It was the farthest thing from my mind when I was coming out of Moorhead. I had a kid on the way, and to me, my career at Moorhead didn't go how it was planned due to my wrist. So basketball was the farthest thing from my mind. But I got connected with an agent, and he got me a contract halfway through that summer after I left Moorhead. And I'll be honest, I was on the brink of coming home probably about 2 weeks after because it was just, for one, a culture shock. I mean, it's just completely different way of living, different life that I wasn't ready for at the time. But luckily, I had an organization that kept the faith in me, and they let me stay over. And I ended up finishing out the season as one of the top 15 scorers in the league. I made the all-defensive team and led the league in steals. And after that, it was just – the doors just opened. But just being able to play in Europe just opened my eyes to so much more and just honestly made me a better person just because of life that's led over there. We get a lot of things in America that we take for granted. And just seeing that and seeing how they lived and coming back home in the summers, you know, it just really changed me and opened my eyes to a whole lot more. But I also accepted a lot of the cultures in Europe as well. Mm-hmm. I still talk to quite a few people over there that I play with and fans as well. So I still have, you know, connections there that I want to go back and visit sometime soon as well.
Who do you think is maybe the best player that you were able to play against? And it might not be known to everybody, but maybe why that person might be the toughest or best player that you were able to play against, to have the privilege to play against.
The toughest that I played against by far that I had to guard was Tyrese Rice, that played at Boston College. Okay. He's went over to Europe and made a great name for himself, winning EuroLeague championships and MVPs and everything. But just his size and the way he played, for a guy his size, you wouldn't expect him to play at a pace that he plays at. You would expect him to play super fast and quick and lightning speed, but he plays slow and then all of a sudden he's gone. He's out of sight right as soon as you blink. So he by far was the toughest because he could put the ball on the floor. He could shoot it. He could do everything offensively. Another player I think I'd have to say would probably be, I would say Ricky Paulden. He's been over there in Europe now for going on, I think, 15 years. He's actually still playing. But just to play at that level, and to be consistent that he's doing. He was just tough, very athletic.
Yeah, put hot water.
So he was a guy that was super tough as well.
Or cold first. You can try the cold.
And let's move now into your career now. As you said, at first it was maybe a tough choice to be a teacher, but talk about the rewards of being a teacher, the rewards and the challenges. First the rewards, and then kind of the challenges too on the back end of that. I know special education, you really have to be it takes a special person. I know some teachers, and it's one of those where, you know, you have to be really dedicated to the profession. And so just talk about what it means to you to be a teacher and to mentor kids.
Well, first off, you know, for me being a teacher, besides being a basketball player, being a teacher and having something to do with education was always on the top of my list. Most people that have had a major influence in my life were teachers and, you know, people that I saw every day. And just for me, just being a teacher now, just it's something that I'm proud of. For one, because I get to have a hand in helping shape the future of this country. I mean, as we all know right now, there are a lot of issues going on, and just being able to be in a school building and, you know, have an effect on kids and be something positive and show them that, hey, you just don't have to make it in sports to be a professional person as well. So for me, that's like the main thing that I'm proud of right now. As far as the challenges for me, I would say that just being in special education, it's not, you know, it's not as much support as I think we should get. And also I will say this, the pay for what most teachers go through, especially right now with the virtual schooling, I would much rather be in the building than online. It's probably about five times more. I can tell you right now, I'm probably working from about 8 a.m. to at least 7 or 8 p.m. now. And, you know, with everything going on, is fine. But being in the building, it will lighten the load a whole lot more because I coach as well. So without basketball right now, it's okay. But when coaching starts back, we're going to have to, you know, my load is definitely going to have to change a lot.
I was going to ask, you know, about the virtual school, and there are people on kind of both sides of the fence on that, but I guess for safety issues, obviously right now, that is the case. And so how do you kind of go about your day when you have to do everything online right now? I know that obviously the technology is there, but you know, like you mentioned, you do miss that face-to-face interaction.
Sure. Sure. It's an adjustment. Right now, it's more so just trying to keep the kids engaged because after a while, you know, being on the computer, you can only sit for so long. So for me, I try and do different things to keep my kids engaged as far as with the classwork or making a competitive game out of an educational game online that keeps them involved. But just everything else involved, like there's just more extra paperwork. I have my own little desk station set up right now, and it's just cluttered. Like, there's nowhere to move, nothing to move. I have papers all over. But the virtual option, I do like it because it does give you a lot more options online, and you're able to learn new teaching styles. But I'd rather be in person because I deal with the behavioral students. So for me, it's all about building that connection and getting them to have a trust and respect level for me and showing them that I also have that same trust for them and respect for them as well. So being face-to-face for me would be a lot better than it would be as being virtual.
Well, sometimes, unfortunately, the home situations can be a little rough for especially those kids. And to be able to have a mentor like you with them, I know has to be satisfying, but they might have some troubles at home and things that you could kind of take their minds off of when you're in school and in face to face.
Yeah, that's another part of it too. I mean, just being at the school and the kids knowing my background, because I didn't tell them that I played basketball or anything. Most of everything they found out on their own. So once they find out, it's just like they're all attracted to me then. And I have students that I've taught like 2 or 3 years ago that they'll see me out. They run up to me, or they know my son. So they'll send him messages and ask him how I'm doing and things like that. So, I mean, just seeing that from former students shows that I made an impression on them and that hopefully it was positive and it'll encourage them to go on and do something positive as well.
And I guess one last thing, you did mention your coaching too. Are you coaching like a middle school basketball team, or is it like other kind of youth basketball? And kind of just talk about, I guess that leads me to, you know, kind of a question of all the lessons you've learned through life. How do you take that into coaching too? Because those things, definitely there's a lot of things you can learn, and as being a teacher and being a mentor and also being a coach.
Yes, I'm doing high school now. I started off doing high school when I first moved to Louisville. And last year was the first year that I done middle school. My son was moving up to middle school, and I was coaching at a private school here in Kentucky in Louisville. And the schedules wouldn't align up where I could see him. And my wife was finishing up with her degree as well, and I was going back to school also. So I just decided to step away for a year. And I coached middle school, and we done pretty well and lost by 3 in the championship game after going undefeated the whole year. So,
I made the
proverbial close promise. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're still heartbroken over that. And I made the proverbial promise to them that I would come back next year and help them win the championship. And right before school ended in the first session for NTI, I got a call to come back and coach high school. And I took a few weeks and thought about it and talked it over with my wife. And I honestly wasn't going to take it because I made that promise to those kids. So I wanted to honor that promise to them and show them that I was going to be there regardless of who came calling. But my son came to me and, you know, he went back and forth and he just came out and was like, "Dad, you got to take the job." So I ended up going back to high school. So now I'm currently an assistant coach at DuPont Manual here in Louisville. With coaching period, you know, like I said, I had a lot of influence from past teachers and coaches as well. And just what I learned from them and how they treated me, you know, it showed me a lot. And it showed me that, you know, just being a coach, it's not all about just the sport. It's about connecting with people and being another figure for them and showing them another way, because in the same light, sports and life go hand in hand. You know, the same way I compete out there on the floor is how I compete every day to get my kids' attention in class. So whatever I learned in sports, I carry it over in my life as well.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, Quentin, for joining us here on the Talent Talk podcast. And you've got a good thing going there in Louisville, and as being a teacher, a coach, and a father. And as we always say, once an eagle, always an eagle. So once again, thank you so much.
But thank you for having me, Matt. I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time out to do this with me as well, and me being the first guest. And yes, once an eagle, always an eagle. And hopefully I can see everybody at a basketball game this season once everything clears up.
All right. I appreciate it. We hope to see you as well. You're welcome anytime here at Morehead State. So that's going to wrap up our first episode of Talent Talk, the podcast. Several ways to listen to it. If you found it here, you can always find it on msueagles.com and on social media. And we'll have lots more episodes coming up and interesting guests as we move forward with this podcast this year. So once again, thank you to Quentin Pryor, and I'm Matt Schabert, and signing off here on Talent Talk.